This episode of Talking to Mod is sponsored by Sam's Barbershop in Northern Ireland. Not only can you get a haircut to look like an ace face, you can also dress like one too. Upstairs, they have a wide range of men's and women's clothing to suit you for any occasion. So what are you waiting for? Go check them out. How we doing, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Talking to Mod. This week's guest has already been on. He is a very good friend of mine and I'm glad to have him back. That is the fantastic Russell Hastings. So let's find out what he's been up to since the last time he was on the pod. Sit back, relax and enjoy Talking to Mod.
Yes, Russell.
Perfect. Can I turn it that way round or what? Which way round do you want it?
Whatever way you can see me. That's perfect, like that, the other way.
Like that. Yeah. And I can't put the charger in.
All right, man. Where are you?
I'm on a boat in the middle of nowhere. I'm in the middle of nowhere, literally. Well, I'm actually in Poole Harbour.
That looks peaceful, man.
Oh, it is great. Do you want to have a quick look?
Yeah, come on. Jesus.
Have a look around.
That is stunning. Mm.
Just a couple of boats moored up over there. So yeah, so came back from last night. Came back from Devon last night. So we made it back here to at sunset,
mate. So, that is the dream, mate. That is, isn't it? I mean, you ain't got to worry about your neighbours, have you?
Not here. No. What neighbours?
Exactly. Yeah. Have your music as loud as you want, mate.
Yeah. And let me just get a cushion, make yourself comfortable.
Exactly that, man.
That's Pete Robinson here. So I you wouldn't believe it, I've got the phone propped up on a can. It's just the way it is. But how are you doing, all right?
I'm very well, mate, very well. I see that boat in the background. If it keeps on coming a little bit too close, I'll give you the heads up.
Let me know if it's going to crash right into me, won't you? I've had my eye on him today, actually. He'd be fine.
No, I'm great, mate. I'm very good. Thank you for asking. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm really good. Yeah, really good. I think, we've been away I've been away for about 5 days, 6 days. So, sort of just settling into chilled mode.
That's good.
Although I can sort of hear my wife laughing because she's upstairs.
Upstairs?
Yeah.
How many floors have you got on that boat?
Oh, just two.
We were in Belfast Harbour yesterday, right? And there was this yacht, and I googled it, and it was ridiculous. It was worth something like 29 million or something, and I'm like, it's by this Swedish entrepreneur. He's just like, because you put the name of the boat in, which is amazing, and it comes up all about it and where it's made and that. It's fascinating, man. But I'll be lucky if I get a rubber dinghy or something like that at the moment.
I don't know, but you never know, do you, what's around the corner? And if it's what you like doing and it's your thing and that's your thing in life. Because I've been in the boats all my life, since I was a toddler. And I lived on the beach all my life. And I always wanted to, just have a boat and get away because you can get away from it. So I went the furthest me and Kim did, we went the furthest we've ever been the other day. So which is down to Devon, down to Dartmouth, which is Noss on Dart, which is amazing. And it takes some balls coming around some of the hairy points that we did do. But last night was just a beautiful trip back. And then you think, oh, it's just so amazing, so lucky. It's just so fortunate to be able to do it.
Yeah. Answer me this. You'll be the perfect one to ask this question. So me and my missus were talking about this last night. So maybe a big yacht or a bit, sort of ship. Do they need to ring ahead to the harbour to say, like, we're coming in here tonight, or do you just bowl in?
They do, really. You can't just bowl in. No. If you're over 20 metres, you need a pilot coming in with you. So you need somebody else to come in. Some of those big ships that come into the harbour, they're not brought in by the captain, they're brought in by another skipper, gets on them about 3 miles out at sea. A local man who with local knowledge, and he gets on them and brings them in. And also, if you're that big, you can't get into it. You can't just sort of tip up and say, I've got 100 metre super yacht outside, any chance of a berth for the night? You know, there'd be no room at the inn. You'd be turned away.
And am I all right in saying, I take it you have to pay a fee for per night you're there, a bit like a hotel?
It's just like staying in a hotel, yeah, if you like. But it's, you know, yeah, it is, that's right. But we're on anchor, so we're in the middle of the wilderness, which is great. So we'll just spend the you know, a few days here, which is lovely. It's one of the places to be.
Get your head down for a bit and then back on with the shows?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, we're off for about 3 weeks or so. And then we've got another 5 festivals, I think, right the way through till the end of September. And then we begin the Setting Suns tour, which starts...
I'm looking forward to that. And you're coming to Belfast for that one as well again, aren't you?
Yeah, we were only out there a little while ago, weren't we?
I know, I missed you. Yeah. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, I thought you'd be there.
No, do you know what it was, Russell? I think I actually had a show myself, and it weren't until the evening where someone posted, fantastic night, and I was like,
yeah,
I could have met you for a coffee before or something, do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. But, yeah, well, it's always great to catch up with you. But
appreciate that.
Always good.
But, I mean, what's been happening since last time we met? I think you were just about, or last time we had a chat on this pod, I think you were just about to go out again on tour and with Bruce and the boys and all that. I can't think where it was all about to kick off, but I mean, let's talk about how it's been with you all.
It's always like an endless, not endless. What's it? Yeah, I guess it's an endless. We're always on the road, it seems, because we get through to summer festivals. And then we start an autumn or stroke winter tour, you know, and that goes right the way through now till, dare I say, sort of April now, from October through till April. And then we do festivals right the way through the summer again. And then we replay another album. And also this year, it's been great because I've been really putting back in some of the older new stuff off the last 3 albums that I wrote. Which has been, you know, I've loved doing that. And a few times I've gone out and I've opened up the set with playing things like Pictures and Diamonds, Lula, Number 6, you know, on my own or with the boys before Bruce comes out. So I've enjoyed doing that because I'm really proud of those songs. And, you know, they stood the test of time. And also the one of the tracks, which I don't think I'm allowed to say it yet because not until the programme comes out, but on the last episode of Clarkson's Grand Tour, not the Clarkson's Farm, but on Clarkson's Grand Tour. So they've used one of the songs on that, which I think is the last episode where they're all, the 3 of them, for the very last time in history that they're ever together, and they chose that track, this track that they've chosen to go across the plains again, like in Africa or something like that. But I've not seen it, but that's out in, I think it's out in September. But I'm really pleased with that. And also digging through the last 36 tracks, which are 36 tracks off the albums, off the last 3 albums, from Back in the Room through to Smash the Clock and The Butterfly Effect. You know, I really like The Butterfly Effect, and it's not like I play it all the time, because I don't. But when people talk about it and I hear a track or two off of it, or it comes up on a playlist, you know, because your own stuff, you'd be listening to something. I say to Alexa at home, play so-and-so, you know, play whatever track. And then she plays similar, you know, they do. I think, oh, I know this track. And I think, oh, I wrote it. It's like that. It's on that. I know, it's mad, isn't it?
It, mate.
But I always think, oh, at least I'm getting paid while I'm listening to it. You know?
I love how, like, every time we speak and when you speak about the songs that you've written yourself and the albums you brought out yourself, I love how proud you are about it, and rightly so, because it's beautiful music. And I remember I mentioned this to you before, when you performed some of your own music, you took a break from the jam stuff in Belfast and then put in some of your own stuff. The reception you got was brilliant. And I mean, that must be for you. You go, this is what it's all about.
I do. I love that. You know, especially when you're playing it, not just in the UK, but we went to Australia and the same reception there. When you're playing, you know, And you're looking around and they're singing all the words to it. And you think, well, hang on, I'm 9,000, 10, 12,000 miles from home here. You know, and they're singing it or they're asking for it, which is great. They're shouting out for it. So, and I love that because it tends to give you a little bit more poetic license on the track when you're doing it. And if I sing a verse round the other way, it doesn't matter because I can, because I wrote it. So I can do what I like with it, but not that I would sing it round and wrong. I've done it in the wrong order. That's what I've done before. And but it makes me laugh. And I always think of them. I'll tell you what, I had the joy the other week of speaking with Glenn Tilbrook. And I know Chris Difford anyway, but I was speaking to Glenn backstage at a festival from Squeeze. And I said, Glenn, I just wanted to thank you for being one of those songwriters that was one of the ones that came before me that I took a lot from, his songwriting ability. I don't mean the way these lyrics or Chris's lyrics, but the way that he used to find the magic middle eight or bridge that he would go off to. Like, Paul's really good at that. Mm. And so is Paul McCartney's really good at that. You know, and they always used to, you know, the bit in the song that people turn around and go, oh, I love this bit. You know, this is the bit I love. And it goes off and then it does what's called a resolve when it comes back to the track again. Well, Glenn was really good at that and is. And I told him that I've said it in interviews before. And Paul's really good at that. And it's just finding that magic thing to sew the song back together. And so it was great to be able to talk to him. And he was really, really grateful. It was because it was backstage. So it was all, you know, everyone's guard was down. And it was really nice. And nobody was being overly protective or anything. It was just nice to talk to him about it. Because, he's, you know, those sort of songwriters to me are a dying breed. Mm. You know, many of them. And there certainly ain't going to be many of them left, you know, because the stuff I hear today, some, well, not all of it, but a lot of the stuff I hear today, and I don't want to sound like my old man here, I think, fucking hell, what's all that about? What is it? It doesn't, you know, maybe it just leaves me cold, you know, a lot of it. You know, the stuff I hear on the radio today, you know, just, I don't know why it's even on. I can't even find a radio station. We late night travelling, we might listen to Six Music or something like that, but then sometimes even that's just so off the wall, I just don't get it. Maybe I'm just off, and maybe I haven't got a clue. I have no idea. No,
radio isn't for me these days. I mean, I'll be like, let me tell you, I ain't listened to the radio in my motor for years, mate. I've always got a CD in there or collect my phone to it because, like, half of them, you just don't understand what they're talking about. At least there's music that me and you, I mean, I class us as the lucky ones because we have a very good taste in music, yeah. And we, you know, I mean, and I thank my mum and dad for bringing that into me, you know, like letting me discover all these wonderful musics, but wonderful tunes, sorry. But it's like, these days, I can't even relate to a song. Like, I'm like, if, say, for instance, you've got an advert on and then they play this song and they go, oh, this is like number one and that. You think, fucking turn it in. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, totally.
Like, do you know what, right? Going, what was that recent thing? I think Glastonbury, right? And I think they had, I think Coldplay were headlining, they shut it or something. Do you know what? I thought, I'll give them a little bit. I mean, listen, I'm not one of them people who, I don't dislike them, but I've just, they're not my cup of tea. Do you know what I mean? So I'd have a little listen to them. And I couldn't work it out. It weren't for me. It just weren't for me. And I was, like, don't get me wrong, it was a massive spectacle. They had all these people, like, with wristbands on, and the atmosphere must have been electric. Yeah. But the music, I'm like, fucking hell. Like, they've sold millions upon millions of billions of records.
I know.
I'm thinking, who the fuck's doing this? Do you know what I mean? But
well, most of the stuff that, you know, Glastonbury's, like, the Emperor's Clothes, as far as I'm concerned. Mm. I'm looking at, well, it ain't doing it to me, you know.
No.
But maybe I've lost the plot over the years. Maybe I'm too. I don't know. I'd like to think I'm open-minded about it because I was talking to somebody the other day. And funny enough, it was a member of the Jam I was talking to, and we were talking about classical music. And obviously, I won't mention who it was. And we were talking about classical, and I went, "Listen, remember when you switched me on to like Eric Satie and Adagio and all that stuff, and some really good off-the-wall classical stuff." And I said, and I still listen to that to this day with that picture, picture, because you taught me how to like to listen to it, and I know that sounds weird, how to listen to get into classical music. He said, because it's so pictorial, you can picture anything you want, and like an oak tree in the middle of a field I have with Adagio for strings, that's how I listen to it, you know, on a hot summer day. And then Eric Sarto, you know, is that like leaning on a piano with absolutely, with just carefree and just going through it, almost finding the notes as he goes, you know. And I said to him, who would have thought that you'd have switched me on to classical music? He laughed and he went, I'm just so glad I did. Because he found it and it turned me on, you know, and I love it. So I'll be honest, you know, me and Kim, my wife, we often listen to classic FM. You know, I'll have it on and chilling in the car. And sometimes when we've finished the gig and we're on the M6, we haven't got all rock and roll going. We've got like, let's have some really chilled out driving back home overnight music, you know. And that's what we do. It's only subliminal. It's in the background, you know.
I'm a bit like, I got myself into that Hans Zimmer for a bit. I might have mentioned this to you before, but it's like after a show, and sometimes even before, that build-up where you don't want to go too much over the top. You want to reserve all your energy. And I listen to a bit of that, and it chills me out completely.
Great,
completely isn't it? Mate.
But you, that does, anything that does that is doing its job, you know, it's doing its thing. You know, like I'll quite often listen to UK Subs, Tomorrow's Girls.
Brilliant.
Check the track out, you know, listen to that and listen to the guitar in on it. And it just does it for me, you know, and it really speeds things up and I just love it and I'll rewind it and, well, rewind it, sound like they'll but I'll press the back button, you know.
Do you know, discovering music is still, for me, it is pure magic. I mean, I must mention this story to you, I think you'll like this. When I went on a tour with the Brian Jonestown Massacre, now every night they got me into something different, right? We went from Bollywood, honestly, all that sort of music to classical, to folk. Every night was something different. And the rules were, if I was to play anything, it couldn't be Oasis or I was getting fucked off the tour bus. So I didn't do any of that, mate. I thought, fuck it, I can't risk it. Yeah. So they got me into a bit of folk music and I can't remember the name of this band, but they did this song called William of Winsbury, right? Mate, I've never heard anything like it in my life. So much so, me and my partner, she had it as when she was walking down the aisle, she had that song playing because I've never heard it before until I was on tour, but I played it to her and it just brought all these emotions out. She was like, that is unbelievable. Let's play it again. And played it again and she's like, we're having that song.
Brilliant.
And it's just amazing how music can trigger off all these fantastic emotions. And that goes back to you when you're on the stage and you know that you can make or break someone's night. You know, you can give them the best performance and they're going to be talking about this to years to come. And on the flip side, if it goes wrong, they'll still be talking about it in years to come. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And who knows the magic when that magic walks in the room? Who knows when that's going to turn up? Because, you know, it does. Yeah, it's just one of those things where you come off and if you think, fucking hell, yeah, that was fucking great, that was, you know. I like to think that it happens a lot. Which it does happen a lot, that does. You know, and I wanted to also, you know, bring up about, you know, being sober and clean when you're listening to music. It's a very different experience. And because I'm long-term sober now, and I still, when I got sober, you know, I thought, fucking hell, how am I going to listen to this? How am I going to, like, how am I going to listen to music ever again? How am I going to play? How am I going to do all that stuff, you know? And I'm sure you've experienced this yourself.
Yeah.
Because they're emotions that are real, you know. And I know we're not talking about, it's not a sober pod or anything like that what we're talking about, but it's part of, you know, right. We're asking these questions and that, and it's part of my life, you know. It's part of my life to sometimes sit with your own self, your natural self, and listen to something, you know, because it was difficult exploring music and exploring what it did for me. And I was glad when I got into that classical music, like, I feel that emotion in that. Back in, you know, in about 20 years ago that was, and when I could experience it and feel it, you know, so it needs to be, so because it's very easy to experience music when you're off your nut, You know, it, you'll listen to, you know, but you've got to listen to it and then be sober and listen to it. Because I have no choice.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like, it's not a choice for me. It's not. Talk about it being a choice thing in life. Fuck that. It's not a choice. It's, there is no, you know, that is a road that cannot happen for me, you know?
100%.
You've
known me long enough now to know that I'm in the same boat as you, and exactly as what you say, it isn't a choice. It's just it can't happen. This is the path that we've chosen.
Yep.
And going back to what you said, mentioning about certain, like, there were certain songs I couldn't listen to early on in my recovery because it would trigger off memories and moments of shit. I remember listening to this. Like, I used to listen to a lot of Hacienda classics, right? And I thought, fuck me, I've had some good nights listening to this. And it took a long, long time for me to sort of train my mind up and say, you don't have to associate this song with a certain drink or a drug. Yeah. And it took a while. And when I got there, I understood the music even more, which is mental, you know.
Funny you should say that, because I was talking to Mick Talbot about 2 years ago about Confessions of a Pop Group, and I got into that album in round 88 when it came out, and I was doing a lot of acid at the time, and I got right into the album. I mean, right into it, you know. And the memories when I hear it now, it sort of takes me back to that period of time. But then a couple of years ago, I was talking to Mick about it, and then talking about it, you know, because I also experienced Confessions of a Pop Group in my first rehab in 92, and listening to that, and it got me through some really dark times, you know, and then listening to it with a lot of joy and happiness over the years. So it changed from, you know, and now I can listen to it really free and open, and I love the album. It's a great album. Talked to Paul about that as well. I said, you know, about Confessions. I thought it was just brilliant. It was just got missed by a lot of people, I think. I thought it was a wonderful album, you know, load of classic stuff in that, you know.
100%. But it's, yeah, isn't it wonderful though when you know you can just listen to it and at the end of it you're still going to be sober rather than thinking, shit, I'm nervous now, what's going to happen, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's great. You know, like this year I was 27 years just gone, 27 years.
Brilliant.
But when I say that, it is like I'm talking about somebody else. I mean that, you know, because I always wanted to be long-term sober, and the only way I was going to get long-term sober was by being long-term sober. I mean, that might sound like I'm stating the obvious, but, you know, when I wanted to be a year sober once, you know, I really craved to be a year, and you know what that's like, you know, and then you hit the year, and then the year protects you, and then you get to five, and then you get to, when you get to 10, you think, wow, you know, I've cracked it. Well, then you've really, you know, there's no crack in anything. No. Trust me. And then you start, it then becomes over the years, you know, not the be all and end all in life. And then you can't make excuses as to why you're being a bit of an arsehole just because, you know, you haven't had a drink or a drug for many years, because you can't really blame it on that anymore. So it either means you're just naturally one or you're having a bad day. Yeah, I've been honest, you know. So with your raw emotions all the time, you know, and going out on stage and being nervous and doing that sort of thing, you know, you've got to live with yourself. You know, you've just got to live with it.
Mm.
You know, people say to you, so they say to me, you know, what do you do to relax? I think that's a fucking weird question, actually. Well, I don't take a load of heroin and, you know, I don't drink and I don't take a load of drugs. So what do I do to relax? I do whatever I find I can to relax and surround myself with nice people, really. That's what I like to do. Not too many of them. I'm not really a people person these days. As you can see, I've got much more of a recluse friend, you know. And but I don't mind that, you know. I'm happy, you know, being like that. As long as everybody around me is happy, I'm all right.
Listen, that's the main thing in life, isn't it? Is make sure you're happy and the family around you. And I mean, I must mention this. I always mention it whenever I speak to you, and I want to bring it up again. I remember when, going back to the sobriety thing, there's something that stood out in my mind when me and you were speaking, because you've sort of been, I mean, we've known each other for a long, long time, and it weren't until I sort of hit rock bottom where you put an arm around me and you gave me the tools that I needed, and it was up to me if I threw the tools away or if I worked with them. And I like to think I've worked with them, but there's something that stood out for me, and it was that when you hit that, and you mentioned it there, when you hit the year, that's a safety net.
Yeah.
Now, if when I first, I remember you said a minute ago, you know, there was a time when you craved a year. Let me tell you, there was a time where I think you'd be the same. We craved a week or something. Yeah. And I found the best thing I did was, and I state in the obvious when they say, you know, you wake up and you just say, today you're not going to drink. And it is that one day at a time. Because if I said to myself, I'm going to go a year sober, it would never happen because you'd scare yourself.
Yeah.
And that stood out for me, though, you know, when you said that, that's a safety net. Also, you mentioned about when I hit a year, that you'd be bringing me on your boat for a bit of dinner. And I'm still waiting for that. And I'm two well, years man, now.
You know where I am? I'm down at Poole Harbour, if you can swim out.
Listen, I'll get out there, mate, and you'll be somewhere else.
I will. I'll be up. I'll be able to watch you coming across the bay there. I'm about 2 miles from the land that I can see in the distance, which is lovely. It's completely isolated here. When I'm looking out to the right there, about 19 miles to my right is the Needles on the Isle of Wight, which is a great place. We always hang out in Isle of Wight. I love the Isle of Wight, you know, because it's in my territory around that area, you know. But it is beautiful around here. It's just places that I've... I remember I was actually in this spot here. I had a brilliant interview with Nile Rodgers over the about the David Bowie days, you know, and I remember it was right where I am now, about 3 or 4 years ago. It was a fantastic interview. So I was a big Bowie fan, you know, and always have been a big Bowie fan. In fact, I've named my boat after Hunky Dory, after his best album, well, I think. Anyway, and listen to it on this spot here, and I remember him talking about the Let's Dance sort of period, which Bowie really sort of didn't like because he thought it was all commercial, but you know, a lot of people loved it. And really, when you look back, I often look at a lot of videos of David Bowie, and he looks so alive and so young, you know. And somebody said to him, well, in an interview, they said to Bowie, so what would you like to be remembered for? And everybody thought he was going to say something, you know, like Life on Mars. He went, for having great haircuts. And I thought that was just brilliant of Bowie, you know, because he had some great haircuts, you know. He did have some great haircuts, you know. He's lucky enough to be able to have some. But he was just a force to be reckoned with, you know, from day one, that man, you know. I loved everything about him, you know.
No, it's good when you can really connect to a performer. I mean, I think it's no secret of people who I admire in the music industry. I think it's there to show, and you know, it's fascinating to have role models like that. And then, as you can relate to this as well, when you then make a friendship with them, it's even better, isn't it? Because you think, wow, this is someone who I've idolized. And then you always wonder, like, oh, what they're going to be like, and then you get to know them and you're like, oh my god, this is unbelievable.
The people that I, and you know, the people that, you know, that I worked with over the years that I've really respected and admired, and, you know, was a kid going to those gigs years ago, Paul, Bruce, Emmerich, they all turned out to be a lot nicer than what I imagine, or how the media portray them all as. Do you know what I mean? They're much more human. And my relationship with Bruce was being my best friend over the years, over the last 20 years. My relationship with Bruce was the one that surprised me most, because for whatever reason, you know, Bruce was one of the funniest men I've come across. He could make me laugh. Me and him have such a sort of the same sense of humour, you know, and we'd be cracked up, you know, we've been all over the world together so many times, and it's been a great experience, a great ride. And he's just one of the funniest people you could, as well as been a phenomenal bass player, you know, great bass player. You know, Bruce has self-confessed. He said, look, I'm not a front man, I'm a bass player. That's what I do, you know, and he knows that. And so hence the reason he needs other people to front the band with him, so that Bruce can be part of that machinery, and he can fucking blow it away, you know. He's playing on stage is just so powerful, you know, and a big force to be reckoned with. And lucky enough to know them all, Rick, Bruce, and Paul. And And I've had, you know, Paul's probably the least person I know. Yeah, I mean, I've spent quite a bit of time with Paul, but I've certainly spent so much time with Bruce and loads of time with Rick as well. I've been around the world with Rick. And I've had a lot of laughs with him as well. It's all been a great thing. And when I look back, you know, and sometimes over the years, you know, I'd forget that I'm with members of, you know, the Jam, and I'd get out of a car and we'd go into a services and somebody comes up and says hello and you think, oh yeah, that's right, you know, just, you know, it sort of puts it all back into place. And then of course we get back in the car again and we're all just like human beings, you know, normal human beings, whatever you want to call it, you know.
It's mad, yeah. Isn't it? It's mad. Are you looking forward to going back on the road soon?
I'm looking forward to having some time off at the moment because it was a busy year. We did Dubai, Australia, New Zealand, came back, went back on the road. And then it's been a lot going on behind the scenes, and it got really gritty towards the festival season. And thankfully, we got on the road with doing the festivals, which is pretty straightforward, really. I played some great festivals this year, great fun. People don't take themselves too seriously. Some great artists backstage. I like all that, you know.
And, yeah.
Phew, it takes all the pressure off. You can be a bit more humorous, you know. I like a bit more. I like day-to-day humour, you know. When it's all getting a bit serious, it's all sometimes a bit, oh, blimey, you know. You're coming home sort of 3, 4, 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning. You're getting from an overnight travel. And I'm not getting any younger. And I've noticed it, you know, in the last year, especially coming back over late overnight, you know, travel back. It's been tough. But, you know, I'm sure it's tough doing a lot of other things, but I'll be 60 next year. And I can't believe I'm saying that. That's just not me. That's cannot be true. I can't be nearly 60. But, yeah, that's what's happening. So I'd like to take it a little bit more, a bit easier, I think, you know.
Listen, just keep doing it, mate. Keep smashing the back doors in.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the great thing. You just, you know, what else? Because when you do stop for a period of time, it's like when you stop doing anything, you start to twiddle your thumbs a bit. You know, I'm okay for a little while, and then I'd really fancy getting back in the studio, to be honest. I'd like to do that because the last experience with the Butterfly Effect was such a great experience because worked with a brilliant producer called Al Scott, and he's the Levellers producer, produced all the Levellers albums and did all the live stuff, and I've known Al for quite a few years. Me and Rick Buckler, that is, went to see Al about 20 years ago, and we listened to some old Jam demos around there, funny enough, which was great. Some demos that I know no one's heard, you know, because, and I've heard them, and I know that they've never seen the, you know, and I know what the tracks are. And we went round to the studio and they were baking, you know, what happens with tape over the years, it sort of starts to disintegrate. And so you've got to, they bake it. There's a process, a real oven baking process. And then he put it on the reel-to-reel and he was playing it. And there was a track on there and it was a bit of Set the House Ablaze, but there it was just a bit of Paul thrashing some guitar and whistling on it throughout the whole thing. And it was great, and there were snippets of various stuff, which was great. So we ended up getting a relationship with Al Scott, and then about 5, 6 years ago, playing a festival, and on this loadout around the back of the stage, Al Scott's backstage, and he went, Russ, I went, fucking hell, Al, where you been? I haven't seen you for years. I went, you still producing? He went, yeah. I said, okay. So at the time, Vic Coppersmith Heaven, who was produced all the Jam stuff, was interested in doing it, and doing the Butterfly Effect, but that was through the end of the COVID period. And Vic, being like 74, 75 years of age, he wanted to have an aircon room, and we just didn't have the budget to do that. And he wanted to do a load of demos, and we just went, well, we just haven't got the budget. So we went and saw Al, and then Al said, look, just come in the studio. And it was just such an easy breeze, you know, and I'd already written Lula. And I'd already written a track which Vic Smith loved, which was called Too Old to Cry, Too Young to Die, which comes out on a charity single to do with some another thing that I've done with Mick Talbot and Dennis Greaves, and so another little project that's coming out. It's just we've all played on a track. I think it's called This England or something like that. I did sing it, but I can't remember the name of it. Al Scott produced it. And it was such a pleasurable experience to do the butterfly effect. It really was. I look back at it with a lot of love and a lot of happy times. You know, we go in there at 10 in the morning, leave at 5, 6 in the evening, and just use it as a day job, you know. And it was a great time. So I was listening to a lot of George Harrison stuff at the time, and I loved all that, you know, because I'm a big George Harrison fan, always have been. And I was listening to Across the Universe as well, with, you know, with the Beatles stuff, and so it was all entwined, really. So I'd turn up at the studio and Bruce would say, "Do you want coffee?" I went, "Not now," and I'd run in with an acoustic guitar and go, "Al, quick, record this." We get some ideas up, and that's how that album came about, really. So I'd written probably half of it, well, more than that, actually, 3/4 of it before I turned up in the studio. And then I was left to, with Mark Brzezicki, we're doing a lot of playing around from Big Country and a lot of other stuff Mark's played on. Mark was a great drummer to work with, as well as Mikey Randon, who played on a few tracks on that. So it was a real pleasure, and that's what I'd like to get in and do. I'd like to go in and do some more, really, you know, because it's sort of, it answers a few things for me, doing that. I've got a few ideas that have sort of been kicking around. It's nice when, because Paul's got his own studio there, so it's quite easy for Paul to just call in, and he's got, you know, stuff on call, and we always said that, you know, what a lovely thing to have a studio there and to be able to turn up and go, "Oh, I've got a couple of ideas, I'm going to go down and you know, for a couple of days and work on that and then bring it all out." But I enjoyed the experience, and then once you record an album like that, like I heard Back in the Room the other day, which was mine and Bruce's first album that we did together, and it was terrifying doing that album. I remember that. Paul played on about 7 tracks, that, and he played on about 2 or 3 on Smash the Clock as well. But it was terrifying because I knew we were going to be put up against it. Do you know what I mean? Everyone was going to start comparing. Mm. We didn't have no idea. We had no inkling to sound like anything other than me and Bruce and Mark Brzezicki and whoever else was in the room to play some songs, because it was just all about the songs. And whoever says, "Oh, it sounds like this and it sounds like that," well, if it does to you, then fucking great. But there was no intent with the album. And I look back and I think there were some good tracks on that. You know, Number 6 was a great pop track. That did well for us, and I liked that. And there was another one, Louder, on Smash the Clock, and Now the Time Has Come, and yeah, few strong sort of tracks. Window Shopping as well.
Yeah.
Right track. Paul played recorder on that and guitar. I played a bit of reverse guitar on that, which was bonkers. It was the first time we walked in the studio and we had the whole day, and Paul was playing on a load of stuff, and he played Glockenspiel on Number 6 as well, and piano. That was mad that day, completely mad.
Mental.
But it was great fun, you know. And so then we stood, you know, we stood on our own feet with the Butterfly Effect, which did great for us, the best album that we did, you know, I think, in my opinion.
But you got some fantastic reviews for that.
Yeah, got some great reviews, yeah, which was, that's always quite scary when you think, once it's released and you think, now other people have got to make their, you know, you criticise it, you know. But fortunately, I think it comes out with like 4.5 stars on the reviews, you know, like on Amazon, whatever that means, you know. I didn't write any of them either, but they you know, people say it's great, whatever.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
As long as you enjoy it and that you enjoyed the moment bringing it out, that's what matters as well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, totally. So I want to know about, how's the magic going?
I'm all right, mate. It's going all right. I don't have to don't have to work for Asda or Sainsbury's anytime just yet. But
yeah, good man.
It's going well, man. Like, I got some doing a show. I put out the Grand Opera House in Belfast. I was in talks with the promoters in Northern Ireland, and I said, I was sort of umming and ahhing, and I said, "You know what? Right, let's do this." And I put this show out, and it sold out with it's got more than, it weren't until 6 months. I think we put it out, I think it sold out in about 5 weeks, and it's still another 6 months before the show. And then they said, "Fuck, like, all right, we'll do this." And we're playing, I'm doing the Limelight where I went and saw you, where I got that on January 15th. Belfast on Saturday, London. It's going well, man. Like Spain, doing a tour in Spain in October, I believe it is. So it's just, you know, I'm looking at it at a different aspect now to where I used to look at it when I was, you know, in my drinking days. I used to just think, this is it. You know, it's just, it's my party after and that. And when I looked at it from a different way and go, well, this is actually my career. If I fuck about it, no one's going to book me. And not only that, I won't be able to afford to have a house over my head. And, you know, you see it from a totally different angle. And now I'm just doing the best I can. You know, if it, you're only as good as your last gig, aren't you, in this industry?
Yeah, sure. Yes, the one like, that's in your own head anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just keep knocking down that door. You know, when people asked me 3-4 years ago where I wanted to be, it was like, oh, I want to do more stuff on the TV. I want to have this. I want to have that. And now when people ask me, it's like, no, I just want to keep on doing what I love to do. You know, you just see it from a totally different aspect, don't you?
Yeah, I just always think, you know, do what you do and then just wait for the miracle to happen, really, because it eventually it does anyway. I'm a big believer in that, Ben. I really am. I've been a believer in that for years. I was taught that in my early days, and just believe in it, and it'll happen anyway. Do what you know, do what you want to do.
100%, 100%. I'm very, very happy with where I am at the moment in life, and that's not just like in career wise, that's like mentally, physically. I'm yeah, in the best position I've ever been.
You sound like you're in a much better place than you were a few years ago, and it's great, it's wonderful. And I'm, you know, there's always people out there, you know, when you sort of live in lightly in the public eye, people have always got an opinion.
Mm.
They always will have, and sometimes it differs from yours. And you've got to just learn to, you know, the best thing I do is just ignore it all, really. I just buy into my own thing and really sort of breeze through it. You know, I don't do Facebook. I don't really do much. I do Instagram, which we're on at the moment, and that's pretty much it. I'm not technically gifted towards the other stuff. And I, like I said to you last night, I think it was, I said, remind me how we're going to do this again, you know, and you said, well, I'll send you an invite. I went, oh yeah, that's right. Couldn't remember it. But yeah, I just think, just ignore people as well. Ignore, you know, a lot of the stuff that you hear, you know, because just, I always say to the guys, the others, keep off social media. It's the best thing you do. And just don't, even when you think I'm going to look at a sneaky great review, because underneath a great review, it'll be a shit one.
I remember when I was on tour with the Libertines and their manager said, never Google yourself over a show and all that. He said, don't do it. And I remember we finished the tour and the fucking enemy, the enemy of all things, the enemy wrote a review saying the Magic Mod with his unwitted humour and his shambolic magic. And I was like, fuck off, mate. Do you know what I mean? I remember telling Pete, I remember telling Pete the next day, I was like, Pete, look at this. And he was laughing about it. And I was like, no, I'm a bit like pissed off by it. He's like, mate, I couldn't give a shit about it. And he was furious.
It's the right attitude to have. It's very difficult to have, and to, because, you know, if 999 people in a room think you're great and the one doesn't, I want to know why he doesn't.
Listen, I remember I found out have you seen the documentary Baby Reindeer?
No.
Fucked. Like, some people don't know what I'm talking about, but it's about this stalker. So anyway, I managed to find out who the bloke was who did this review, right? And I remember, I think it was a video of me, it was either a video of me and Paul doing a trick to him, and it just blew up on social media. It went, got thousands upon thousands, hundreds of thousands of views, or what, it went mental. And I remember tagging this bloke in it from the enemy with one word, shambolic. Fucking gets in that, mate. Not that I'm bitter or anything.
No, but just, you've let it all go, and it's really,
I know. Like, I haven't got pictures of him on my dartboard or nothing like that anymore.
Yeah, because you can't let them live in your head rent-free, because they
No,
will.
but do you know what, Russ? At the time, it did though, because you got to think that was like the first sort of real tour I did. I mean, the first time I ever went out with an artist was with Paul. He let me go around at a lot of his shows and perform, and it was an amazing experience. And then the full tour I did was with the Libertines, and that was something that I thought this could really push me on to the next level. And then I remember reading, I had some great reviews. I really did. But you always somehow the great reviews enter, you don't have to search for them, they find you. And I thought that's brilliant. And then I remember seeing that review. But then let me tell you about this one. The last tour I did, again, sober with the Brian Jonestown. That was the first tour I ever did sober, and I didn't know how I would do. And I look back at myself from the first tour I did to this would have been my sixth tour with a band, right? And I fucking smashed it out of the park every night because I knew what I was doing. And being sober, I knew my comebacks were on point. So anyway, I did what you should never do, as we said, and I googled myself, right? And I found so many amazing reviews. Like Rock City said he should have his own headline show. The Barrowland said we've never experienced an act like it. He was phenomenal, blah blah blah. And then I come across Reddit. Now, I didn't even know this. I didn't even know this fucking website existed, right? So it's, I don't know what it is. I still don't know what it is. It's some page where people, you don't even know who the people are who are putting these messages. And this bloke was like, there was a comment from this bloke who said, "I'd love to find him and punch him in the face." And I'm like, what sort of fucking review is that, right? And I'm pissing myself. Honestly, but at the same time, I'm thinking shit because there was a review saying, "Oh, it's the worst thing I've ever seen. I've never done it." And then I just thought to myself, "Listen, that is definitely someone who's in a band who's gutted because they've hired it. They've booked a magician to be on the full tour and not a band. You know what I mean?" So,
You always get that. Yeah.
do you know what? Fuck them. I learned to
Funny. It's funny.
since being in this journey, you know, since we've been friends with Bill and all that, it's I've seen it as I don't really care what people think about me. The only people I care, the only people who I care who care about me and love me is my family, you know, and that's all that matters. You know, it's great that you've got a load of friends and people who would be there when you need them, but as far as reviews go, I couldn't give a fuck because listen, at the end of the day, the magic circle certificate speaks
Yeah,
for itself.
I like that. I think that's a great thing to have. It's because I knew all about the magic circle when I was a kid. You know, it was a big thing. And a good friend of mine, he's a member of the magic circle as well. And I just think it's like, wow. You know, that's that. Like you say, that certificate. You know, such a great thing to have. You know,
Oh, right.
people, you know, people when achievements. They call it the good old British public love to knock down the English. I don't really see what's good about that. You
No.
know, it's always, they're always glad to sort of try and knock it, and I don't know why that is. But you know, I guess the golden thing that I've learned tonight again is don't Google yourself.
No, fuck
I
that. I'm not going to do it.
Googled, when I Googled it for not for myself for another reason. I've done it a few times, and it come up with Russell Hastings has heart attack, and I thought, fucking hell. And when you read it in the headlines like that, and because I had it was on the radio, I was lying in hospital, and some people were phoning me up and went, "I've just heard you're a, an heart attack." And I went, "Where'd you hear that?" And they went, "It's on the radio." I went, "Oh, fucking great." And that was in Chai Hospital. I was in St Richard's lying in there. I didn't even have any stents done. And it was all about all the abuse from years ago, that's why. But when you have that, and it's like it makes all it's in cast in stone because you can't delete it. It's in Google, so it's in a it'll be there for eternity. That's the thing, and all those reviews and the bad reviews and what people think of you. But what you've got to remember is, if you was to see the people that are there having a poke from the sides, you know, having a dig, because we build these people up in our heads as being real cool sort of dudes and with big groups of friends and all that, you know, and you have a look, really, they ain't nothing like that. They don't look nothing like that, and they've got no life at all, and they're just out to keyboard warriors, really.
You know, I look at it as the people who are going around talking about you, they'd be the first people if they met you to shake your hand and say they love your work because they wouldn't have the bottle to say it to your face.
No, and I think that look, you know, at the end of the day, what we do is put some joy in people's lives as well, which we're lucky to be able to do. And people come up and say thank you very much for this, and, yeah. and now what a great time they've had, and that's all that matters really,
because
it doesn't matter, and they've had a great night, and that's what it's about. You know, you can dress it up as much as you like and be as arty-farty as you like about it, but they've gone away and had a great time, job done.
Fucking 100%, man, 100%. And you know what? On that note, I reckon we should leave it as that, yeah, brother.
Look, let me have a little, show you a little round, just while it's got a little bit darker around here. Look, let me show you. So I'll show you. There's, look, out there, look. Can you see?
See it, man. Yeah, that looks beautiful.
I'll show you over there, look.
Why don't you jump in it for us, do a few lengths?
I did earlier on. I've been in. It is really warm here today. It is warm. Yeah. Lovely, eh?
That is stunning, yeah. Man.
Listen, great to talk to you, Ben.
Always a pleasure, brother. You know that. Yeah. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, it's nice. It can be so casual. I like that. That's what, the way it's...
It's about, man. It's all about just chilling out. And people enjoy listening to this because it ain't a natural interview. It's just chilling out and talking, man.
I like that, yeah. Well, listen, I'm going to have that coffee on the boat soon as...
I will do, mate. I will do, I promise.
Nice one, mate. Look after yourself. I'll see you very soon.
Will do. Thank you for your time and have a lovely evening.
Your third, Ben. Always a pleasure. Nice one, mate.
Thank you, man. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. The name's gone.